Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Kathy Kay, and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Monday, May 6, 2019, and we are reading from the Big Book, and There is a Solution. We are on page 24, the third full paragraph, which begins, "The alcoholic may say to himself in the most casual way." Today, reading the 12 steps is Stacy T., the 12 tradition, Jennifer W., and reading the text are Cindy D., Kathy Jo P., and Susan H. The reference numbers for the previous two meetings, yesterday, Sunday, the special edition, the reference numbers 12,863 or 12863. And this morning's meeting at 7 a.m. East Coast time, the reference number is 12,864 or 12864. Our newcomer greeter today is Ginger C., and we will hear announcements from Reggie O. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Stacy T. to read the 12 steps.
Good morning. This is Stacy T. from Cleveland, recovering compulsive overeater. 1. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. Thanks for your service, Kathy, and I pass.
Thank you, Stacy T. I'll now ask Jennifer W. to read the 12 traditions.
Hi there, this is Jennifer, compulsive overeater from Sweden. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2. For a group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in a group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, nice, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, film, television, or other public media of communication. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer W. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute, and once you are done sharing, let us know, saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. Today we resume our study of the Big Book on page 24, the third full paragraph, and I will ask Cindy D. to get us started.
Thank you. Good morning, all. This is Cindy D., gratefully recovered in Texas. The alcoholic may say to himself in the most casual way, "It won't burn me this time, so here's how." Or perhaps he doesn't think at all. How often have some of us begun to drink in this nonchalant way, and after the third or fourth, pounded on the bar and said to ourselves, "For God's sakes, how did I ever get started again?" Only to have that thought supplanted by, "Well, I'll stop with the sixth drink," or, "What's the use anyhow?" Boy, I sure remember exactly these thoughts going through my head when I was in the food. And so many times I would be like, "Well, I've already blown it, so, you know, why worry about it? Just keep going," and giving myself permission almost to keep going. And other times I really felt like I had, you know, it wasn't my thought, it was somebody else was in control of what I was doing with my food. I really, you know, the definition of nonchalant includes the word uninvolved, and I think sometimes I was not involved in the decisions. It really felt like something else had control over me. And I know now, being in recovery, you know, I can change those thoughts when they come. And they do come when I'm struggling with emotions, or I'm wallowing in self-pity or self-will and not connected to my higher power, those thoughts come back. And thank God, you know, that I do have the resources of this program and the tools of this program, that I can fight those thoughts and say, "No, you know, that's not who I am. That's not what I choose to do. God wants better things for me today." I'm so grateful for that. And for anybody who's out there struggling, it really does work to work this program and connecting with your higher power. He can do for us what we truly can't do for ourselves, and I'm living proof of that. So with that, Kathy, I'm going to pass. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Cindy G. Okay, I'd like to take some list of names of people who would like to share on this paragraph.
Lisa J.R.
Lisa
Jackie H.
J.R. Jackie
Bruce E.
H. Bruce E. I think I heard a Donna. Is that correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm,
what's
Donna.
The last initial, Donna?
B as in boy.
Okay, thank you. Okay, I have Lisa, Jackie, Bruce, and Donna. I can take a couple more.
Ruth M.
Ruth
Beatrice
M.
O.
Did I hear Nessa P?
Beatrice O.
Okay.
Ginger C.
Beatrice O and Ginger C. We'll stop there for now, and we'll get some more names later. So I have Lisa J.R., Jackie H., Bruce E., Donna B., Ruth M., Beatrice O., and Ginger C. Lisa J.R., please get us started.
Good morning, everybody, and thank you for your service. Thank you all for being here. Lisa J.R. from Baltimore, gratefully recovered. This hits home because for the longest time when I was kicking the tires in this program, the half measures were availing me nothing. I was getting a little wisdom and discernment from you wonderful people, but I wasn't all in. I, you know, kind of handled this in a cafeteria style fashion, you know. There were some things I would do and some things I just wouldn't do. You know, that's not for me. After all, I'm unique, don't you know? So, yeah, that terminal uniqueness had me opting out on for a long time. And so I came, there's some interference on the line, but anyway, I'll continue. Anyhow, it had me opting out. So, you know, it's not going to burn me this time. That was a beauty. Okay, I can have a piece of birthday cake because I am not going to stand in front of the cake, as was my custom when I was alone with the cake, and eat it with a fork right off the cake. This isn't going to burn me. I'll be civilized because, don't you know, there are all these people staring at me, you know, and the truth was that in the end, I wasn't civilized. I ate like a junkyard dog, fast and furiously. And gulped down my food without even tasting it. I just, you know, if a little was good, more was better. And that progressed until I was, you know, choking myself eating and eating in my sleep. It was so bad that if there was food anywhere in the bedroom, I would sit in the bed and I would eat in my sleep. Wasn't until I really looked at my alcohol, looked at what was causing the problem. And, you know, Ruth, obviously that Ruth M. Special edition helped, but the thing that really resonated with me was 1117, Lori C. did a special edition. And I was able to see that, hey, this is more about my behaviors and the combinations of things. And once I had that list in black and white in front of my face, I couldn't BS anymore. I couldn't BS myself into thinking it wasn't going to burn me because I knew. I'm looking at the paper. You know, this is something you don't eat, period. Non-negotiable. And only until I was able to do that and start vigorously working the steps and staying in 10, 11, and 12, but also repeating 1, 2, 3. Yes, I did the 1, 2, 3 waltz every morning, but I definitely followed it up with a 10, 11, 12 boogie. So with that, I'll pass.
Whoops. Thank you very much, Lisa J.R. Jackie H., please share with us.
Good morning. Good morning. Jackie H., recovered in Colorado just for today. Thank you, God. It won't burn me this time. So here's how. And for God's sake, how did I ever get started again? These two things, the reason that for God's sake, how did I ever get started again, is because I have an allergy of the body and a mental twist. That is why. That is how I get started again if I am unaware of the solution. And I was unaware of the solution for a long time, and I was not foreign to 12-step, but I never applied it to my food. I just thought I had an eating disorder, and I tried all kinds of things. I tried therapy. I tried eating mindfully. I tried, it was a horrible, horrible game that I played my whole entire life. And I was actually able to stay abstinent from the foods that I thought made me fat. I didn't call them my alcoholic foods, but I knew that when I ate them, they would make me fat. And I guess I didn't even think that the reason they made me fat is because I couldn't quit eating them. That's just how much in denial I was. But then I had a life event that came about that brought me into the rooms of OA in July of 2018. And I realized, I found out that I had this allergy of the body and that I had a mental twist. And oh my goodness, as a result of doing these steps the way they were designed to do, this ends up being a design for living for me. I had a spiritual awakening. And today, I don't negotiate. I just don't negotiate my food. It is, and I, what a blessed solution this is. I tried everything. I seriously did. And my power, I could not do it. And so I have a power greater than myself. I live these steps. I have to live these steps every single day. And also take the message to other people, because this is for sure my design for living today. And I'm grateful today that I don't have to ask myself, for God's sake, how did I get started doing this again? I don't have to do that, because I don't get started again as long as I keep my alcoholic foods down, as long as I am tenacious about doing these steps. Then I have this protection, right? I have this protection knowing that I can be neutral. Gee, I get to, today, you know what I get to do? I get to be present with people in my life, with my children, with my husband, with my friends. Food is not my go-to anymore. And it was. It was my go-to. And now I realize when it's gone here, it's gone in the form that it was. I get to be really, really engaged in life. Wow, wow, wow. Here at 71 years old, finally engaged in life. Thank you, God. And thank you, Bill Wilson, and all the pioneers that wrote this book. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Jackie H. Bruce E., please share with us.
Yeah, Bruce E., in Southwest Florida, and excuse me, get to be engaged with life today. The food kept me disengaged for a long time because I was engaged with the food and not with life. And the hot stove here, the guy says in a casual way. Now, how many times have I said in this casual way, it burnt me 1,000 times before, maybe I didn't even think about the 1,000 times before, but it burnt me 1,000 times before, it in a very casual way, it won't burn me this time. You know, I can do it again. It won't burn me this time. In a casual way. You know, just very nonchalant. Or perhaps he doesn't think at all. Now, how many times have I gone back and done the food thing, and I didn't even think about it. You know, I didn't even think about, well, it won't burn me this time. I just didn't even think. I just was back into it. And how often have some of us begun to drink in a nonchalant way, and after third or fourth drink, pound on the bar, and said to ourselves, for God's sake, how do you get started again? And every time I did that, every time, whether it was the the one we're making a decision or not even thinking about it or thinking it won't burn me this way. Every time I went back to thinking, how in the heck did it, for God's sake, how did this thing ever start with me again? I had made a decision not to do that. I wasn't going to do that anymore. And now the next thing I know, man, it's bag after bag and box after box. Did the one bag, said I wasn't going to do another one. And then it goes on to say, I'll stop at with the sixth drink. Well, I'll stop with this bag or I'll stop with this box. Get the box or the bag done and bang, I'm back into it again. I want another one. Not thinking about what else I can get. So why do I do this, or why did I do that? Well, because the allergy, as soon as I got into the bag or the box, the allergy was triggered, and then the phenomena craving. Well, I probably already had the phenomena craving because of the binge I did that morning or that afternoon or that evening or whatever. So I already had the phenomena of craving. I mean, I already had the allergy in me. So now I already had the phenomena craving too. So I went right back into it, time after time after time. So what's the solution? Well, the solution is get in this program. I started working the steps with a sponsor. I put the food down, which was amazing to do that. I was just amazed I could put those alcoholic foods down. I did in this program, work with a sponsor doing the steps, and the obsession and the compulsion lifted, and the phenomenal craving didn't come because the compulsion and obsession lifted, and I wasn't using the alcoholic foods. So because I wasn't using the alcoholic foods, phenomena craving didn't come. So didn't set up that whole chain reaction. So thank you for letting me share with that. I pass.
Thank you very much, Bruce E. Donna B., please share with us.
Thank you. This is Donna B., recovered compulsive overeater, calling from Denver, Colorado. I would like to talk about how this applies to another aspect of my disease. I have reached my goal weight as per my nutritionist. And when someone comments on my weight, I have the thought that maybe I could lose a few more pounds. That maybe when I see my nutritionist the next time, I could suggest to her that actually my goal weight should be 5 pounds less than the goal weight she has previously set for me. And when these thoughts come up, I have to constantly remind myself of the prayer to ask God to relieve me of my obsession with weight. Just as when I have thoughts about food, I ask God to relieve me of my obsession with food. I know what this thought process looks like, where I forget that what I'm doing is drawing closer to my higher power and finding a way to be of maximum service to God and to the people about me. When I'm thinking about the weight, I'm entirely in self-will. And a life run on self-will can hardly be a success. Just as I can recall with great clarity what it was like when I casually picked up my alcoholic foods and found myself binging and purging over and over and over again. When I casually pick up the idea that it's okay for me to use my self-will, to disregard my nutritionist, to disregard my sponsor, and think that a few pounds more won't hurt me, I know that I'm setting myself up for a deadly situation. While I simultaneously coach my sponsees that this is not about losing weight, and I can see that when my sponsees start to mess with their food plans, what a dangerous and deadly path they're on. So I'll continue to come. I'll continue to show up. I'll continue to pray. And I'll continue to rely on the wisdom of those that have gone before me. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you very much, Donna B. Ruth M., please share with us.
Hi, this is Ruth M. Thank you for your service and all the sharing. I just want to say that I just want to clear my seat and say that, you know, this reading really sticks out for me. The alcoholic may say to himself in the most casual way, it won't burn me this time. And, you know, I'm a chronic relapser. I'm recovered now, but I'm a chronic relapser. I'm coming from that. And every time I'm very familiar with this thinking, the nonchalant way that it won't burn me now. I've done it over and over and over again. I've lost my weight. God only knows how many times. I've been in recovery. God only knows how many times trying to overcome this disease. And I just like to say that thinking it won't burn me attitude still kicks up for me. And I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. And that's why, you know, I still get that mental blind spot. And that's why I know that I have to stay in 10, 11, and 12. And that is maintaining me being recovered. I am newly recovered. I do my 10 steps. I do my 11 steps at night when I retire, and I do my 12 step by having sponsees and reaching out and trying to be of maximum service to God and the people about me. So because I have been for several years operating off of this nonchalant attitude, and then next thing I know, I'm back in the food. I recognize it to its fullest right now. And I'm just, and I'm not saying that, I got this, I can do this. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that I have to stay in the process because this still kicks up for me. And so many times I have relapsed and said, for God's sake, how did I ever get started again? And it got to the point to where I knew where how I got started again. And I know now how I get started again. But I also know this disease is cunning, baffling, insidious, and I have to live in the steps. Every single day, and you know, sometimes I say, why do I always have to do this? And I'm on the pity part, and I have to do a 10 step. I have to accept who I am, and this works for me. This Vision for You process works for me, and I just have one day, and with that, I'll pass.
Thank you very much, Ruth M. Beatrice O., please share with us.
Good morning. This is Beatrice O. from Los Gatos, recovered food addict. So I had a sponsor who told me, that was the first time I ever heard that statement that said, if you keep putting your hand on a hot stove, you're going to get burned. And I'll never forget it. I was fresh out of treatment. I was in the third, you know, the 30-day spin dry, they call it, but I was in there for eating disorders in Naples, Florida. I had come home and I was sober. I was clean with my food. It was no flour, no sugar. And I was working my program in the aftercare program, doing meetings and therapy twice a week. And I met this guy. A co-worker introduced me to her brother, who was a loser. In my opinion, I knew he wasn't healthy for me. And I thought he was my knight in shining armor. And I knew he wasn't healthy, and my sponsor told me, you know, don't get in a relationship for a year. And, you know, I finally realized why they say that. It's because you're not going to be the same person you are when you start working the steps a year from now. You're going to be a different person. And so that's why they tell you to wait. At least my sponsor did, but I ignored her. And I couldn't leave this relationship, and I even got on my knees and said, God, get me out of this relationship because I can't. And I started to eat in a nonchalant way, and I started to gain a few pounds here and there, and I disregarded everything, and I disregarded that it was dangerous. And God answered my prayer, and the relationship ended. And I ended up back in treatment. And then I was telling the therapist about my broken heart, and she told me to go to step four and read page 53 in the 12 and 12. And she said, but it was for our twisted relationships with family and friends and society at large that made that many of us had suffered the most. And then it goes on. But I realized that I was not only a codependent with food, I had an codependent relationship with food, but relationships. And, you know, I had like a, I don't know, maybe an 80-pound relapse after that. Fighting food and being nonchalant and thinking it won't burn me is like getting in a boxing ring with a professional boxer. You know, I'm going to get my ass kicked every time. Anyway, I'm grateful to be here. Thank you for letting me share. And I'll pass. Hello?
I'm sorry, I was muted. Beatrice O, thank you very much for your share. And Ginger C, please share with us.
Hi, good morning, Kathy. Thank you so much for your service. This is Ginger C, recovered compulsive overeater in Colorado. So for God's sake, how did I ever get started again? And Bill tells us, for if an alcoholic fails to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. And so it's real clear, how did I get started again? Well, I've dropped God's hand once again, and stopped this practical program of action. You know, this is just this daily reprieve. And the only reason why I'm not eating today, because of this big book, thank you, God, bringing me to it, is I have tapped into this power that I lack. It's only down deep within us. It's not hard to find. But I got to stay close and connected to be safe and protected each and every day. So yesterday's shower will not keep me clean today. What am I doing right here, right now? I'm on a meeting being of service. You know, and then how do those minutes go on throughout the day? How am I thinking about God? Am I close? Am I thinking about what I can pack into the stream? Or am I back to selfish, self-centered thinking? And it's a tall order. That's why we continue for a lifetime. It's not overnight. But, you know, I would say more importantly for me in my experience with food, how did I ever get started again? I never, ever conceded to my innermost self that I was a real compulsive overeater. I knew it was bad. I knew it was progressing, but I was not convinced. So thank God for every beautiful bite that I took, because I always say this, one less bite, I may not be here today recovered. It takes what it takes. I hope today's pain's enough for those that are suffering. But if you're not convinced and you're not afraid and you're not giving this disease the credit it deserves, you will be with your fist pounding again, saying, how did it happen? And again, to all the times I went out, it's this human condition that Harlan so beautifully talks about, these emotions that build in me that I'm not dealing with, that I'm not being honest around. This anger, this nervousness, this jealousy, worry, depression, life is pressing in, pressing hard, and I need an effect. I need ease and comfort at once. And because I didn't give food the credit that was due, that was what I was going back to. That back door always remained open. And again, because of this loving grace of a God, the door finally shut. And I was convinced. And I got out of my head, into my heart. And I was like, I will do whatever it takes to never have another bite enter my mouth, because now it's become life and death. And I'm afraid of it almost more than the vodka and the drugs and everything else that I've been into. Food finally got my attention the way it needed to. So with that, I pass.
Thank you, Ginger C. We have time for probably four more shares.
Irene.
Susan H.
Carlisa.
Okay, Irene B.
Irene B.
Carlisa.
Susan A.
Carlisa.
I have Eileen C. and Susan H. Who else?
Carlisa.
Carlisa. What's your last initial, Carlisa?
C.
And one more.
Paul G.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Paul G. PM. Oh, Paul G.
Somebody PM. Who was that?
Janice PM.
Oh, Janice. Okay, sorry.
Yeah.
Okay, we've got Eileen C., Susan H., Carlisa C., and M. And hopefully we'll have time for all of you. Please go ahead, Eileen.
Hi, good morning. My name is Irene B., an abstinent and happy recovering bulimic. I have some experience, strength, and hope to share this morning. I am highly codependent with my husband, and my marriage is very questionable. But if it weren't for this program, my husband would have divorced me 3 years ago. We are far from where I like to be, but we are in a much better place thanks to this program. So something happened on Thursday with regard to my husband, and I went through the food in a way that was crazy. I consumed probably over 3,500 calories. And I did not know why. I'm 60 years old, severely, severely bulimic. I became a compulsive overeater at age 6 and became bulimic at age 17. I'm dissociated, daydreaming, repressing memories. I'm a mess, but I'm a real testament to God's glory and grace, His infinite love. And by the grace of God, He delivered me from the compulsion to binge and purge and not being abstinent for 25 months. Well, Thursday was hard. And I even thought, oh my gosh, this is my time to binge. But I was so scared. I have not been abstinent through my own accord. I did not white knuckle it. Not really. God delivered me. And the fear that God would not do another miracle kept me from purging. For me, when I was in bulimia treatment, not purging was a great sign of recovery, because that meant that I took responsibility for my actions. And I thought I would never, ever, ever, ever ever, under any circumstances, ever be able to overeat and not get rid of it. But I did Thursday. Friday, I got back on the horse, and I said, this is not going to happen. And then Saturday, I talked to my husband, and he made a comment that scared me. I did not acknowledge, didn't get into it, and I just pretended like it didn't bother me. But that was another over 3,500 calorie day. On Sunday, I realized that okay, I guess I better pack. I'll just say that this morning, I used the tools, and thanks to this program, I did not go into another 40-year relapse, and I thank God for that, into the program, and we got out past.
Thank you, Irene B. Susan H., please share with us.
Good morning. This is Susan H. I am a recovered compulsive overeater in Ohio, and I'm very grateful. It won't burn me this time, so here's how, really stuck out to me. And mostly they're talking about the drink, the food, but I honestly feel like it applies to the overthinking, because that seems to be my first step into the craziness, the return to the craziness. I was thinking how it reminds me of what it says in the doctor's opinion, that they cannot after a time differentiate the true from the false. And that is true. I on my own will twist the truth. And that is not true. But my own twisted mind can believe the twisted. I am dishonest. And I must reach out to my fellows and get feedback when the old craziness puts me back on the hamster wheel, when I can't tell the true from the false. I was blessed to do another 10 step on that last night. The craziness was there. I'm sure the food was not far behind. But today, I'm grateful. I'm reaching out. And I'm just happy to be here, and among others that understand my craziness. So with that, I will keep trudging, and I'll pass.
Thank you very much, Susan A. Carlissa C., please share with us.
Good morning. This is Carlisa C. Thank you so much for your service. Thank you, everybody, for being here. Thanks for this big book study. I want to just talk about, for me, this paragraph is about the mental obsession. These are the types of ruminations, justifications, denial, questions that I will ask myself, I have asked myself, and hopefully today will not ask myself, but I'm very familiar with this kind of rumination. And I want to give you an example of how this stuff does really work, because the founders write at other places that by this time we have accepted huge chunks of truth about ourselves. Well, the truth of myself is that if I don't get what I want when I want it, which is I will have a fit, okay? And it will be a fit of overeating. It will be an emotional fit. It will be a hissy fit. It will be something. So that is my working definition of selfishness. If I don't get what I want when I want it, I'm going to have a fit. And that definition helps me understand my core belief, which is I'm not good enough. I'm not good enough, right? I'm not enough. So how does this all play into what Carlin and so many others talk about? This is a buildup of human emotions. These are things that the human emotions build up on for me. So if my core belief is what it is, I don't get what I want, I'm going to take it personally, and I'm going to have a fit. But today, I can learn tools. I can learn different types of skills. I mean, when I say tools, I mean skills. And the steps are all about learning new skills. So I can be honest with myself. I can talk about it. I can write about, I can take a problem through the steps. I can use something other than, oh, my go-to ruminations, oh, here's what's going to hurt this time. I certainly have an armor against compulsive eating today, don't I? It's been a week, it's been 10 days, it's been 10 years. So this stuff really does work, and I'm pledging and want to work it today. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you very much, Carlissa C. And Janice P.M., please share with us.
Well, good morning to you, Kathy K., and everyone that's on the line. Wonderful shares. Yeah, I don't know what I can add except, you know, I can be recovered. I could be abstinent naturally. But my mind is the problem, okay, even though I'm recovered. Because I'll tell you why. When I think my will that I can control, if it's in my direct control, then I know that it's my will. But if I know that, you know, it's beyond my direct control, that has to be God's will. And I know that sometimes, like, for instance, I have to do a 10th step after this meeting. And it happened yesterday, and I didn't do it. And I know that I cannot control anybody the way they eat, the way they lead a meeting. And what happens to me, my emotions come up when I think like that. See, this is all about the mind. It's about the powerlessness of my mind every day, every day. And I'm a little lax on doing a 10th step because of why? Because of my pride. Because of, I think, oh, well, I know how to do this. I know the results. I know what I should do. I can name the criticism and I can do all that. But it's the humility that I have to have every day to do a 10th step. And that's always been my problem because I think I know so much. Well, I don't because it's still in my head. And, you know, yeah, I know what the problem was with my character defects. But you see, I don't always know. And I think that I can compare myself that I'm not like that. I know. And that's a lot of humility. And when I think like that, see, thinking has to be 100% powerlessness in my mind. So there's no powerlessness there when I'm thinking like that. And yeah, I went through the steps and I know what to do. And I do the step 11 and 12, but that 10th step is what gets me all the time. I know we're not in the 10th step, but it's like, that's not my, I don't have the solution. My higher power has the solution. And so when I accept that which is beyond my control, God's will for me. I can't control certain things. And when I think I can, like the food, oh, this time it'll be different. Oh, yeah, well, you know, I can stop at 3 because I know more. You know, I know, but no. Janice, you don't know that you have to be more humble. You have to have less pride. You have to do a 10th step when some emotion goes around and around in your head. Yeah, you may know what your fault is, but you have to do a 10th step because that's what it says. You don't go over the 10th step and then go to the 11th step. You do the 10th step. You know, and that's what I have to do. And sometimes for years, I didn't think, oh, I didn't have to do the 10th step. I can go right to God and everything. No. That's my pride. See, and I know that today. And that's how it is with the food or the liquor or whatever it is that I have to think that I can control. I'm powerless over control over certain things. I can't control my breath. So, I mean, who's to think, well, yeah, okay. It's going to come. No, I don't know that. So that's what I have here is 100% powerless in the mind. Mind is the problem. I can't rely on my knowledge. And that is the problem. And I'm almost certain of consequences. And thank you so much. And with that, I'm going to pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Janice PM. Thank you, everybody who has shared and listened today. Wonderful, wonderful meeting. I want to give a special thanks to Stacy T., Jennifer W., Cindy D., Kathy Jo P., and Susan H. for helping me lead this meeting. And we will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, and then follow that with the Serenity Prayer and Mr. Greeter and announcements. So, Kathy Jo P., would you please read A Vision for You?
Yes, this is Kathy Jo P., a recovered compulsive overeater in Minneapolis. Today I'm in Mexico. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep